I know you're out there. I know that you're afraid. You're afraid of us. You're afraid of change. I don't know the future. I didn't come here to tell you how this is going to end. I came here to tell you how it's going to begin. I'm going to hang up this phone, and then I'm going to show these people what you don't want them to see. A world without rules and controls, without borders or boundaries. A world where anything is possible. Where we go from there is a choice I leave to you.
Connecting the dots of the Constitution for you like no one else can. The Chris Ann Hall Show. American woman, listen what I say. She's an attorney, a disabled U.S. Army veteran, an author, public speaker, mother, pastor's wife, and a patriot. She's Chris Ann Hall.
Rise and shine, liberty-loving patriots. Welcome to the Chris Ann Hall Show. I am Chris Ann Hall, where we are always liberty over security, principle over party, and truth over personality. Today's show, Constitution, 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 all about liberty, all about preserving liberty. It's not just enough to point fingers and lay blame. We must be focused on liberty. We must find the problems, we must locate the solutions, and then we must get active. That is so very important, the activity part. Quite often, social media, unfortunately, makes us say more and do less. And so I want to activate. I want to equip you with the knowledge of the problems and the solutions to those problems at the same time. And today's show is going to be all about property rights, all about the First Amendment, all about the founding and the original intent of who we are and how we are to ensure, let me just make that clear, how we are to ensure the preservation of liberty for our posterity. That was the goal of our founders, the preservation of liberty. You know, I love the people who founded and laid the foundation for our constitutional republic, who fought and battled for our independence so that we could live in a place that was established upon the principles where we know that government must recognize that all men are created equal and endowed by their creator with certain inalienable rights. That's who we are. That's the spirit and the foundation that builds America. That is what makes America great, by the way. I have become, I was introduced recently to a new founder of American Liberty. Her name, I guess she's not new, considering I'm just finding her, but she's been around for a while. Her name is Nancy Hart. Yes, I said her. Because those of you who are regular listeners, regular watchers of the Chris Ann Hall Show, you know that the foundation of America, our freedom, our independence, our constitutional republic, was not created simply by a bunch of elite, rich, white guys. Our women, our members of minority in society, were just as important to the foundation of liberty, the foundation of our constitutional republic, as any person that you might just simply recall off the top of your head. And Nancy Hart is one of these. Nancy Hart, they believe, was born in North Carolina, but she defended liberty in Georgia. She is referred to, they said they called her Nancy, or Uncle, I'm sorry, Aunt Nancy at that time. She was a very tall woman, over 6 feet tall, with fiery red hair that matched her fiery spirit. She was not only recognized for her patriotism in her day, she was decorated. She was had a huge fiery passion for liberty, and the history says that she unleashed that passion against British loyalists. She was left alone, as most of the women were back then, who had patriotic husbands, to fend for herself and her children. Her husband served as a lieutenant in the Georgia militia, and she, in his absence, became such a staunch patriot. Most of her legendary acts of courage took place at the family cabin not far from the Broad River. One evening, this history says, a Tory spy crept up to the log cabin, and one of the Hart children, noticing an eyeball peeking through the crack, secretly informed her mother. Hart, who was making soap around the fireplace, filled her ladle with boiling soap water and flung it through the crack. A scream confirmed her aim. The Tory was then hogtied and taken as prisoner by the local militia. Nancy Hart had many, many occasions to defend liberty against those who were either deceived or addicted to the servitude of the king, addicted and deceived by power. She was an amazing patriot in the foundation of American liberty. So look her up. Her name is Nancy Hart. You can find a picture of her home, her cabin, and you can also find an artistic rendition of one of her patriotic moments where she had four British soldiers try to occupy her home and demand that she cook for them. She agreed to cook for them, by the way. And while they were waiting, they had set their muskets on the along the wall. And while she was cooking, Nancy was secretly handing the British weapons out the window to her children, literally disarming these men. When one of the soldiers realized what Nancy was doing, he stood up and raced at her. Nancy picked up a gun and told him, "Don't move further, I will shoot you." Apparently, he didn't believe her, and she actually did. The rest of the soldiers were taken into custody by Nancy Hart and turned over to the local militia. I wonder if this is what Thomas Paine was talking about when he, in his first edition of The American Crisis, cried out for the Jersey maid to rise in her passion and spirit to defend the liberty of the people. I bet this is exactly what Thomas Paine was talking about. Well, praise God for Nancy Hart. I hope that she is looking down on us today here at Liberty First. And in seeing the passion that we have for the liberty that she so dearly held and fought for. That's all I want. That's all I'm asking for, is for us to recognize that the spirit of Nancy Hart courses through our veins as well. Sorry if I get kind of worked up over those kind of things. I really, really enjoy hearing these stories and this history. You know, the history of Nancy Hart literally unwinds the propaganda that's being taught in our classrooms and our textbooks today. Speaking about propaganda, I want to share with you a story that I found in the news about a student at the James Madison Memorial High School who is demanding that the name of her high school be changed because the name makes her feel less than safe. The name James Madison, she says, makes her feel less than safe. And the fact that the name of their high school is James Madison Memorial High School, she says, creates an environment in which African American students feel unwelcome. Now, James Madison High School is named after our fourth president of the United States, a delegate to the Constitutional Convention, a representative of the state of Virginia, an amazing patriot, and essential designer of our Constitution, a fighter of liberty, for liberty, not just a fighter for liberty, but it's someone who was demanding that liberty be the focus. When you read what James Madison wrote in the foundation of our Constitution and in the Federalist Papers and his letters and his notes during the debates, on what he said during the debates, you cannot deny that James Madison was focused on liberty. And not just a liberty for the white guys, by the way, but a liberty for all people. What saddens me is that if we had been teaching this young woman and her classmates and her generation, if we'd been teaching generations of Americans the truth about the foundation of America today, she would not want to change that name, but she would feel honored to go to a school named after a man who fought so completely for a liberty that ensures her freedom. What James Madison did in laying the foundation of our constitutional republic and demanding a focus upon liberty ensured that she could be free. And the very, very sad thing is that Maya Berry, a senior at James Madison Memorial High School, has been so deceived that she doesn't even understand the origin of the liberty that she enjoys. What is the matter with our teachers who continually teach these lies? What is the matter with our superintendents and our school boards who always pick up these school books that teach lies?
Chris Ann Hall Show. She's Liberty's lobbyist.
Maya Berry, a student at James Madison Memorial High School, posted a petition on change.org to have her school's name changed because the name of James Madison does not make her feel safe. In the petition, she wrote, "The lack of representation I feel in this school makes me feel more than unsafe. I do not feel supported by the majority of staff at Memorial, especially considering the fact that I've been called the N-word multiple times, along with having an individual threaten me by telling me they would lynch me." What does James Madison have to do with this? James Madison would be just as appalled as I am by the fact that this high school student was treated in this manner. The petition cites that because James Madison inherited slaves from his father, that he should not be remembered with honor in America today. On my website, I have an article titled "How the Constitution Ended Slavery." It is a class that I will be teaching at Liberty First University. It is not a complicated class. It is not a class that is extremely involved or lengthy. It will be a class where everyone will be able to understand and know the truth of history. The question remains, once you view this class, once you read this article on my website and see how clear the position of our founders were about slavery, what they did to end slavery through the Constitution, I want us to ask ourselves, why can't this be in our textbooks? Why can't this truth be in our textbooks? Why is it more difficult to print truth in history than it is to print lies? I think what we're missing here is a cultural difference. I know we're missing historical fact, because the fact of the matter is, our independence from Great Britain was needed not just simply so that we could avoid a tax on tea, but our independence from Great Britain was necessary because we wanted to end slavery in the colonies, and the British government would not let us. James Madison comes from the colony, now state of Virginia, in which the colony of Virginia attempted many times by law to outlaw the importation of slaves and end slavery in the colony of Virginia. And every attempt that Virginia made to end this horrible servitude was met with threats by the British government, not simply financial sanctions, but military action if they refused to allow the British slave ships to port in Virginia. Our independence from Great Britain was necessary to end slavery. This article that I have on the website, chrisannhall.com, How the Constitution Ended Slavery, gives you some direct quotes by James Madison on how he felt about slavery. He said, "Great as the evil is, he calls slavery a great evil." Colonel George Mason says, "This infernal traffic originated in the avarices of British merchants. The British government constantly checked the attempts of Virginia to put a stop to it." They knew that they could not plow new fields overnight. But they also knew that if they could lay the foundations of liberty in America, end the importation of slaves by law, establish that all men are created equal in the eyes of law and government, they knew that it would just be a matter of time, because liberty is contagious. It would just be a matter of time before society would end slavery. And that's exactly what happened.
The Chris Ann Hall Show. She's Liberty's lobbyist.
Do I blame Maya Berry for how she feels? Do I blame Maya Berry for what she believes? I do not. I blame her parents. I blame the society. I blame the media. I blame our the fact that we allow our textbooks to be infected with these lies. I think that it's absolutely shameful. Absolutely shameful. That history that Maya Berry has been taught denies a glory to people like Crispus Attucks and Peter Salem and Ned Hector and James Fortin and the Bucks of America and George Middleton. These men who were freed slaves, who fought for our liberty, are denied their place in history because they overturn the lies that Maya Berry and her generation and other generations have been taught. Maya says, "Do you think it's truly appropriate to glorify a man that enslaved my ancestors?" How can we say that, Maya? James Madison did not enslave your ancestors. James Madison was essential in establishing the liberty and freedom of all people in America. James Madison said on the 13th of May in 1789 before the House of Representatives, "It is hoped to be that by expressing a national disapprobation for this trade, we may destroy it and save ourselves from reproaches and our posterity the imbecility ever attendant on a country filled with slaves." Those are not the words of a man who enslaved. Those are words of a man who was disgusted by a social standard that had been forced upon him and his generations. A man who wanted to make change. Miss Berry, we do not honor James Madison for the reasons that you've been taught. We honor James Madison because of what he did to help us all be free. I just cannot express to you the sadness in my heart to know the depth of the deception that has settled upon America, that has stolen our history and enslaved our people in a mentality of lies. We can change that, you see. The problem is not in Maya Berry. The problem lies in what we are teaching and what we are accepting to be true. Do you know the solution to this problem is not electing a new president and not electing a new congressman? The solution to this problem is that every household must change their mentality from a servitude to lies to the freedom of truth. Truth shall set you free, Miss Berry. And we as a society, we must fall in love with truth again. We must be the purveyors of truth. But here's the problem that we have. We have such an infestation of lies. And human nature dictates you repeat a lie long enough, the people will begin to believe it to be true. And this infestation has gone to the highest realms of our political society. Not only that, it has infected our judiciary. Those who were supposed to be the defenders of our liberty have become, I don't know how a better way to describe it than James II's courts of ecclesiastical causes. We no longer have a judiciary that is dedicated to truth and law. We now have a judiciary that's dedicated to the religion of lies. We have a judiciary who has taken it upon themselves not to live by the law, but to live by beliefs, by ideologies, and to inflict those ideologies by the force of law on the people themselves. That is a court of ecclesiastical causes. That is not a judiciary of law. We have this city that is banning a farmer from the farmer's market because of his views on gay marriage. We have a court ordering that an expose video on Planned Parenthood be removed from YouTube because it is offensive. We have these things happening in America, courts taking land from people, not based on the law, but based on environmental ideologies. All of these are things outside the law, driven by a religious belief that originates in environmentalism, humanism, progressivism, whatever ism you want to put on it. It is not a matter of fact. It is not a matter of law. It is a matter of religion. And we need to be educating ourselves and our generation so that we can break free from this stronghold. Let's talk about this miseducation. Let's talk about how this is impacting society and depriving liberty. On a recent show, we talked about how over 40% of the generation that we refer to as millennials now believes that freedom of speech ought to be regulated to some degree by government. Can we just let that settle in? Almost half of an entire generation of Americans believe that the government ought to have the authority and the power to regulate what you and I say. Regulating speech is not just simply regulating speech. Regulating speech is regulating thought, regulating how we think. James Madison referred to our thoughts as being a matter of property. He says, we not only have a right to our property, he says, we have a property in our rights. And he referred to speech as a physical property of the people. We have a property right in our speech. And if the government can regulate what we can and cannot say, how we can and cannot say it, then we are reduced to slavery. Worse than that, Samuel Adams called it tributary slaves, because you see, we are not just slaves. We are slaves that have to pay our masters for the privilege of our servitude. Slaves on a plantation did not pay their master's money to stay in their servitude. But if we are removed of our rights, if our rights are reduced to mere privileges that exist based upon government permission and regulation, and because we pay taxes to make sure the government exists, that's what Samuel Adams was talking about, tributary slaves. We have to pay tribute to our slave masters for the privilege of our servitude. No, no, no. That is not who America is. America was built on the foundation that we know that government must acknowledge that all men, as a self-evident truth, all men are created equal and endowed by their Creator with certain inalienable rights. These rights are not given by documents. and they are not given by men or people in government. If they are given by documents, if they are given by politicians, then they are also subject to be taken away. They are ours. They are called inherent rights. They're called inalienable rights. They are ours by the nature of our creation to not be removed or abandoned. The Declaration of Independence also establishes this foundation for who we are, that not only are we all created equal, we inherit these rights, but that government, to secure those rights, it says, to secure those rights, governments are instituted among men, deriving their just power from the consent of the governed. The only power, the only authority that government has to wield is that authority that is given by the consent of the governed. That authority is to be wielded through equal representation, confined and constrained by the law of the Constitution. And yet, when we have over almost half of an entire generation believing that government should regulate what we say, how we say it, government now controls us, and we not ourselves. We are certainly not controlling government when they are regulating our speech. Benjamin Franklin said that if a man cannot call his tongue his own, he will hardly call anything else at all.
My right to tote the weapon of my choice. Don't censor my voice. Hate me if you won't, or love me if you can. If the truth is what you want, then you found your man. I ain't backing down, I ain't backing up. If you think like I think, then crack it on up.
Chris Ann Hall Show.
So we have two stories today to help us have a better understanding of First Amendment, of freedom of speech. We have the mayor of Portland calling for the revocation of permits for a march against Sharia that is scheduled to happen on June, I believe, 7th, 8th, and 9th, and 10th, or the 7th and the 10th, rather, in Portland, Oregon. Now, the interesting thing is the rally is to be held on federal property and the permits are issued by the federal government. Now, although this is to be the rally, the march is to be held on federal property. Although this march is to be held on federal property, it is within the city limits of Portland. The rally is a march against Sharia law in America, and the mayor of Portland is demanding that these permits be revoked because he believes that those who will be protesting Sharia law are members of what he calls a, quote, alt-right group. He claims that this march is untimely and will be too disturbing to the people of Portland to see a protest at this time against Sharia law. And therefore, he is calling for the federal government to revoke these permits. Our second story is Kathy Griffin publishing her picture where she holds a replica of a bloody head of Donald Trump. Now, here are the facts. This is a still photograph. The purpose of this photograph is to make a political statement. There is no organized plan, not even a call for people to organize and plan the beheading of Donald Trump. But many people are calling for the government to become involved in a criminal legal action to be taken against Griffin and her photographer because they find the picture so disturbing and because it's the president of the United States. There are, I think that it's almost providential that these two things are happening almost simultaneously. Because what we're seeing are two different ideologies expressed through free speech. And how we react to them will indicate our understanding of free speech and our dedication to ensuring liberty for future generations. Many of our conservative, even politically Republican groups are very active against Sharia law. So the fact that the Portland mayor is asking for these permits to be revoked will make that group of people very angry. That same group of people could also be people who are very supportive, maybe even highly supportive of Donald Trump. There may be people who are just simply supportive of the office of the President of the United States who would be deeply offended by seeing a photograph of Donald Trump depicted in the manner in which Kathy Griffin has done. They may be asking for government intervention in regard to this photograph. What we need to see is how do we feel? Maybe you support Kathy Griffin's depiction of Donald Trump because you believe that Donald Trump is a bad president and you understand this is a political statement, but then you support the Portland mayor's demand for revocation of a permit to protest Sharia law because you don't want to offend other people. What we need to see is that these situations are both protected speech. Not only are they, but they must be.
The Chris Ann Hall Show. She's Liberty's lobbyist.
So the question that I want to pose to you today is search your heart. Search your heart and determine how you reacted to each of these stories. Because in truth, they must both be protected if either is to be protected. Benjamin Franklin, writing as Silence Duguid, explained why freedom of speech is so important and what limits must be placed upon that freedom. Can you imagine Benjamin Franklin talking about what limits ought to be placed on the freedom of speech? This is what he writes in 1722. Without freedom of thought, there can be no such thing as wisdom, and no such thing as public liberty without freedom of speech, which is the right of every man, as far as by it he does not hurt or control the right of another. And this is the only check it ought to suffer, and the only bounds it ought to know. Being offended is not the definition of being hurt. Nor is offense control of the right of another. We must understand that this speech must be protected Government is not allowed to infer an intent in speech that is not expressly made. They cannot look at the picture of Kathy Griffin and say, well, Kathy Griffin meant to organize the people to make this happen. Kathy Griffin is symbolically trying to unite people in violence. That is not a fact. That is an inference. Governments cannot infer meanings in speech that are not expressly made. If we allow government to have the authority, the power to infer meaning in our speech, then they can say, you know, Chris Ann Hall wrote a poem today about the sky being blue. And we believe, since it's a poem, that it's symbolic, that what Chris Ann is really talking about is overthrowing the government. And Chris Ann must be taken into custody immediately, because we cannot have people writing poetry about overthrowing the government. Speech must be unregulated. It must be unlimited, except that you cannot hurt or control the liberty of another. Do you know what's amazing? Benjamin Franklin said that the only check freedom of speech ought to know, and the only bounds it ought to know, is that it cannot control the right of another. Isn't government regulation of freedom of free speech controlling the right of another? Therefore, it is not a reasonable check on this. This freedom of speech, if ignored, if not defended, history proves that there will be dire consequences. Franklin continues in 1722 and says, "This sacred privilege is so essential to free governments that the security of property and the freedom of speech always go together. In those wretched countries where man cannot call his tongue his own, he can scarcely call anything else his own. Whoever would overthrow the liberty of a nation," Franklin says, "must begin by subduing the freeness of speech, a thing terrible to public traitors." Freedom of speech should be a principle so dear to the people of America that we would rejoice over the fact that we are able to be publicly offended. Offense ought to be something that we accept as a dirty part of maintaining liberty. You see, liberty is not a neat and tidy thing. You have to suffer a little bit in order to maintain liberty for future generations. You must be offended. You must engage in some acts of sacrifice. You must be active in the defense of liberty. You must be liberty over security. You must be principle over party. You must be truth over your favorite personality. You must be uncomfortable if you are to be free. Jefferson also said, he said it in Latin, but I'm not going to repeat it in Latin. Jefferson said that "I prefer the tumult of liberty to the peace of servitude." You know, that speaks volumes, because here's the truth. If you are living in peace with your government, if you are not struggling with your government to maintain your liberty, then I believe you're not free. History demands a struggle, an eternal struggle between government and liberty. Government and liberty are enemies. They are natural enemies because the government always wants more power. And the more power government has, the less liberty the people have. And there has been a historical struggle throughout the ages of people struggling to maintain liberty and the control of their government. If you are not struggling to control your government, if you are comfortable, you are in servitude. Government may not prohibit the expression of an idea simply because society finds the idea itself offensive or disagreeable. That is a quote from the Supreme Court of the United States. The Supreme Court, in a case called Texas v. Johnson, in 1989, said a bedrock principle underlying the First Amendment is that the government may not prohibit the expression of an idea simply because society finds the idea itself offensive or disagreeable. You see, these principles of liberty are so deep-seated in America. The Supreme Court has made this their position for decades. In Rav v. St. Paul in 1992, the court opined that even hate speech is to be protected. This was a case about burning crosses. St. Paul had an ordinance that said you cannot burn a cross because it is offensive. The Supreme Court said, no, you can burn a cross because it is offensive. And the government cannot take that speech away. Now, you can't burn a cross on somebody else's property, mind you, because that is now arson. But you can burn a cross on your own property, and the government cannot make it an ordinance of not burning crosses based on the fact that the content of the speech is offensive. The court has made their opinions known of protests and assembly, and they've made them just as clear. In 1968, in a case called Carroll v. Princess Anne, the Supreme Court declared their position to be any prior restraint on expression comes to this court with a heavy presumption against constitutional validity. Prior restraint is exactly what the mayor of Portland is asking for. The mayor of Portland, in his demand to revoke a permit based on the content of the speech and to refuse to offer new permits in the future for that speech because of the content of that speech, is exactly what the court is talking about here. This is what we call prior restraint. What's amazing is that the mayor must have a city attorney. What's the matter with that city attorney not warning the mayor of Portland that he is going to be sued for his statements and he will lose? If those permits are actually revoked as he demands, there will be a lawsuit. And all the way to the Supreme Court, it may have to go. It will lose. The Portland mayor will have spent hundreds of thousands of dollars of taxpayer money only to lose because this is such a settled. I don't even believe in this court they could come up with enough people who would actually support. Now, they could in maybe a federal court in Portland, but they would not find a Supreme Court that would support that kind of regulation of speech. Not only that, the mayor of Portland, if he were educated, if he were loving liberty, if he were just simply educated by an educated city attorney would know that he would not be calling for the revocation of those permits, but he would be establishing enough protection for those protesters so if there was a disagreeing opinion that the protesters would be safe in their peaceful protest. In Dunlap v. City of Chicago, 1977, the Supreme Court says local governments must, quote, provide police in such numbers as in their professional judgment are required to afford adequate protection to the protesters. In Glasson v. City of Louisiana, the courts also said a police officer has the duty to not ratify and effectuate a heckler's veto, nor may he join in a moiling mob intent on suppressing ideas. Instead, he must take reasonable action to protect from violence the protesters exercising their constitutional rights. Gregory v. Chicago, a 1969 case, the court said the same thing. Officers must take all reasonable efforts to protect the demonstrators.
My right to tote the weapon of my choice. Don't censor my voice. Hate me if you won't, or love me if you can. If the truth is what you want, then you found your old man. I ain't backing down, I ain't backing up. If you think like I think, then crack it on up.
Chris Ann Hall Show. She's Liberty's lobbyist.
What these courts are recognizing, what they call the bedrock principle, are principles that have been established for centuries. We did not invent them, we inherited them. And what the Supreme Court acknowledges to be an inherent right of the people is exactly why America was formed as a constitutional republic, to ensure that these liberties would not be denied, they would not be regulated. Thomas Jefferson, our third president, reminds us that if a nation expects to be ignorant and free in a state of civilization, it expects what never was and never will be. When government can regulate your speech, then government can also decide what you can and cannot know, what you can and cannot believe. Freedom of speech is essential to all wisdom and society. We must be able to challenge public opinion. And when you challenge public opinion, there will be people who find that offensive. And if government can define offensive and what is offensive and what is not offensive, what is allowed and what is not allowed, then the only speech that will be allowed will be the speech that government approves. James Madison, father of our Constitution, described freedom of speech as property. He wrote, "A man has a property in his opinions and the free communication of them, and government is instituted to protect property of every sort. This being the end of government, that alone," he says, "is a just government, which impartially secures to every man whatever is his own." Your freedom of speech is not simply the expression of an idea. It is a physical property that belongs to you that government is never to interfere with. These are the principles that make America great. In a liberty-minded society, the mayor of Portland would be ensuring the safety of the protesters and ensuring that the protests continued, even though he knew there were people in his population that would not like them. He would be organizing sufficient force, sufficient protection, rather, for the protesters, not rallying against them. In a liberty-minded society, the solution to those who are offended by Kathy Griffin and her photograph is to voice their disgust, to stop listening to her, to stop watching her, to stop supporting her, maybe even to encourage others to stop supporting her. It is not the proper solution for government to prevent, prohibit, or criminalize her speech. The only real legal remedy to Kathy Griffin and her photographer's photograph would be for Donald Trump, the person, to sue her in civil court for defamation. But since Donald Trump is the president of the United States, he is a public figure. It is not likely that that lawsuit will prevail on the side of Donald Trump. Because you see, the First Amendment was incorporated to remind us that we are free to speak in favor of and against those in government. Freedom of speech is not protected so that you can say nasty things about your neighbor. Freedom of speech is to be protected so you can say nasty things about those in government. These are the essential principles that we have lost sight of. If we wish to be the America of our Liberty Foundation, we must hold fast to these rights. We cannot allow the government to regulate them. There is no authority to do so, and anyone in government or society that would assert that they do is either doing so out of ignorance or out of malicious intent and power for themselves. We must be active defenders of our liberty.
The Chris Ann Hall Show. She's Liberty's lobbyist.
Let us take just a second to address a bit of false information that may be sticking in your mind right now as we're talking about freedom of speech. Some people like to say, well, Chris Ann, what about shouting fire in a crowded theater? Isn't that government regulating speech? Isn't that an acceptable regulation of speech? Isn't that, some will even say, isn't that the law that you cannot shout fire in a crowded theater? Well, number one, it is not law. And number two, it is not shouting fire that is the principle that we're talking about here. You are not going to be sued. You're not going to be criminally prosecuted for shouting fire in a crowded theater. You can go and run around and shout fire in a crowded theater all day long if you want to. But you will be held accountable for your actions. Because shouting fire in a crowded theater is not the act that makes you accountable. It's what happens in response to your act. To your words, rather. If you shout fire in a crowded theater, and it causes a panic in which people are harmed, it is the harming of people that is the is what you will be held accountable for. Not the shouting fire, but the harming, the negligent, falsely shouting of fire that causes people to be harmed. If no one is harmed, there will be no foul. Why? Remember what Franklin said. The only bound that speech may know is that it cannot hurt another or control the right of another. You can shout fire, but see, it doesn't matter what you shout. What if you are in a movie theater crowded with young people and shout Justin Bieber and a panic ensues and people are hurt? Do we now make shouting Justin Bieber in a crowded theater a an illegal act? No, it's not the words that are the act. It is not that make the harm. It is not the speech that makes the harm. It is the negligence in doing so that makes the harm. And when someone is harmed, then you are accountable. What's interesting is that Justice Oliver Wendell Holmes, the one who first uttered this phrase, did not intend to establish a regulation on speech. As a matter of fact, Holmes' words are not even part of an opinion that is binding on the people. Supreme Court opinions have sections in them we call dicta, which is just sort of the judge sort of running off at the mouth. They're not things that are controlling on the people of the in the case or the people in the courtroom. What Oliver Wendell Holmes wrote was, quote, "The most stringent protection of free speech would not protect a man in falsely shouting fire in a theater and causing a panic." It's not a matter of what he falsely said or truthfully said. It's a matter of the panic that created a harm. And without fail, you will always hear people say, well, Chrisanne, you know you can't, it is illegal to shout fire in a crowded theater, and so therefore government can regulate. No. This is a miseducation. I believe it's a miseducation that's actually continued by our professors in law schools, who teach this, number one, as if it is law, not showing that it is dicta, not showing that Supreme Court opinions are not law, but opinions on court cases that apply to the people in the courtroom that do not apply to the world in general. So let's try to get rid of that idea that shouting fire in a crowded theater is an illegal act or a reasonable regulation on speech. It is neither. By the way, I forgot to mention that if you want to be able to share the aspects of freedom of speech that we talked about in the last section about the Portland mayor and Kathy Griffin, you can go to my website, chrisannhall.com, and read and print out and share the article titled "Much Ado About Griffin and Portland: Understanding Freedom of Speech." This will give you those Supreme Court cases that we talked about. This will give you these principles of liberty and the words of Benjamin Franklin and James Madison that we must hold fast to. And one way that we can become active in the defense of liberty is in the dissemination of truth. Let's talk about another aspect of the First Amendment: freedom of speech, freedom of religion. Remember, these are not principles. These are principles to help us understand the rights that are inherent among men. Remember, in the Declaration of Independence, Thomas Jefferson wrote that whenever any form of government becomes destructive of these ends, it's the right of the people to alter or abolish. What ends? These inherent, inalienable rights of the people. It's the only reason government exists, is to secure our rights. And whenever any form of government acts to the contrary of the securing of our rights, it is the right of the people to alter or abolish that government in order to establish a new government that will secure our rights, protect and defend them, encourage them, even expand them if we can. And I want to talk to you about freedom of religion and freedom of speech. We have another Christian farmer kind of thing happening here. In the city of East Lansing, Michigan, they hold a farmer's market. Marine veteran Steve Tennis runs a farm called Country Mill Farms in Charlotte, Michigan. It's about 25 miles southwest from East Lansing, according to the Daily Wire. Now, the farm that Steve Tennis owns also provides services of not just simply food, but also provides a venue for events and weddings. In 2014, two women requested that they be married at this farm, but Tennis declined, citing his religious views as a Christian. Now, he gave them a specific orchard venue that they could hold their wedding. He didn't just simply turn them away. He said, look, I can't do this for you, but I know someone who can. This is a beautiful place. Here's where you can go. And they were married somewhere else. But in 2016, one of these women advocated to the people to avoid Country Mill Farms, which was within her right to do. She sent out a Facebook post that reads, quote, as fall approaches for my Michigan friends and family, when choosing a cider mill to go to, please remember the Country Mill in Charlotte, Michigan refused to let Lane and I have our wedding there because how we identify. Please support a local cider mill that does not discriminate against LGBTQIA plus folks or any folks that matter. Please feel free to share this post. Now, so far, we're all good from a liberty perspective. The orchard being privately owned has the right to refuse service to people for any reason. This couple have the right to publish this fact and ask others to not go to this orchard, to not buy their products. Here's when we have a big problem. Now, East Lansing Mayor Mark Meadows is refusing to allow this orchard to participate in their farmers market, which they had been doing for years. Now, the orchard made a Facebook post explaining this event, that I'm sorry that these people are dissatisfied, but it is our deeply religious held tenant, and we will not be conducting marriages, gay marriages, on our property. They made a Facebook post simply explaining, it is our sincerely held religious belief and conscience. In response to this Facebook post, the city of East Lansing warned Tennis that not allowing same-sex weddings on his farm went against city ordinance. But the city was powerless to enforce this against Tennis, since, in fact, he lived outside of East Lansing. Instead, they tried to pressure Tennis to not sell his products at the city's farmers market due to supposedly preventing riots from happening. Tennis went ahead and sold his goods at their farmers market in August of last year, and no riots occurred. So the city said, no, please, please, please don't come to our farmers market. If you are present, there will be riots in the streets. The bodies, the bodies. And Tennis said, no, we're going to go ahead and do this. And guess what? No riots. Well, the mayor and those in East Lansing government would not be thwarted. They changed its permit policy for their farmers market, forcing Tennis to submit a new application for a permit, and then denied his permit under the rationale that the farm violated East Lansing's civil rights ordinances and public policy against discrimination as set forth in city code and outlined in the new 2017 market vendor guidelines. The mayor of East Lansing, Mark Meadows, then told media, quote, this is about them operating a business that discriminates against LGBT individuals, and that's a whole different issue. This is an amazing case. This is an amazing illustration of how government cannot operate.
My right to tote the weapon of my choice. Don't censor my voice. Hate me if you won't, or love me if you can. If the truth is what you want, then you found your old man. I ain't backing down, I ain't backing up. If you think like I think, then crack it on up.
Chris Ann Hall Show. She's Liberty's lobbyist.
So Tennis, the owner of this orchard, is now filing a lawsuit against East Lansing. He is represented by Alliance Defending Freedom. Remember what we talked about in our first segment today. Prior restraint. Not only that, this law, this new ordinance, this whole new permit process was very obviously and by admission of the mayor himself created to keep this particular orchard out of their farmers market. When government creates a law for the specific prosecution of an individual, that is called a bill of attainder. It is not only unlawful to do that, it is unconscionable in the matter of liberty for the government to isolate one person and create an entire law in order to persecute or punish or prosecute that one person. And this is exactly by the admission of the city officials in Lansing. By the admission of the mayor himself, we have created a bill of attainder in the form of an ordinance and permit application process to eliminate this particular vendor because we do not like his beliefs. See, this is what we are supposed to be offended by in America. This kind of activity. This is what we are supposed to be active against in government. Whether you believe in the principles upon which Mr. Tennis stands or not, you should be standing in his defense to operate according to the dictates of his conscience. Because let me mention something to you. If Mr. Tennis does not have the ability to operate according to the dictates of his conscience, then the woman who wrote the Facebook post does not have the right to step up against his conscience and his views. These two things are so intimately related that the elimination of one is the elimination of both. These women who quite liberty-mindedly, I don't know how to put that, within their liberty, let's put it this way, these women who, within their right of liberty, asked those who believe in the manner in which they believe to not go to this orchard, to not buy their products. And within the liberty of the orchard, they refused service based on their religious beliefs. If government can deny this orchard from engaging in a city-run event based on beliefs, then what we really have is a government of unlimited power who can not only deny but can also demand. So why couldn't they then demand that these people must buy from the orchard, even though the orchard's beliefs are contrary to theirs? You see, what we have here is freedom of expression, the marketplace of ideas. You have the orchard saying, no, we can't help you, it's against our beliefs. And you have the two women saying, don't shop there, they're against our beliefs. This is what we call the free marketplace of an idea. There is no room for government to establish regulations or control in a free marketplace. Because once that regulation or control is established by government, we must recognize that it also carries the force of government, the punishment of government for beliefs. And I would just say to those on either side, to the LGBT side, if you want East Lansing to invoke government power based on your beliefs, you must recognize that one day they may invoke their power against your beliefs as well. The same to those on the religious side. We cannot have government forcing beliefs by the force of law. We must become firm and adhere strictly to these principles of liberty, so that our children may also be free.